Facebook.com.
Well, what's good? What do you think for joining me here on this Friday, June 10th edition of Bang the Book Radio? My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so to get you ready for everything going on tonight and this weekend in the world of sports from a betting focus. Thank you for joining me here on today's show. I'll be joined in a couple seconds here by Keeneland Dan of FatBaldGuyRacing.com. We'll break down the weekend coming up here at Belmont Park in Elmont, New York, the 148th running of the Belmont Stakes. We'll talk about the Acorn Stakes, the three-year-old filly race, as part of Saturday's undercard. Then we'll talk some general thoughts on non-Triple Crown racing, how to approach racing on a daily basis, all kinds of things like that. Second half of today's show, we'll also have Cole Ryan's Betting the Buckets segment, game four of the NBA Finals coming up here tonight. Then to wrap up this week of Bang the Book Radio, I'll chat a little bit about the NHL, also the Major League Baseball card for tonight, the look ahead to this weekend. We'll go ahead and start with our first guest. That is Keeneland Dan of FatBaldGuyRacing.com. Dan, how are you today, sir?
Oh, man, running in circles today, but it's been a fun day already, getting ready to do our first TV show for tomorrow. We got to get ready to tape it and edit it and all the other fun stuff. I'm not good at any of that stuff, so I hope my IT guy's ready.
Well, very nice. Is that going to be over at FatBaldGuyRacing.com?
Yes. It'll be what we're trying to do is every Saturday we're going to start doing a talking ticket show to where, you know, instead of just putting out a pick sheet, which everybody pretty much does, we're trying to do a little video to tell everybody exactly what we're playing, exactly what we're recommending to play, and then they can go from there, leave for the track and go, you know, do what they want to do. But at least they'll have down exactly from my mouth, you know, what races I would play, what tickets I would play, and, you know, try to stay in realistic budgets for people.
Well, and for anybody that's tuning in to hear Dan for the first time on the show or anybody that needs a reminder of this, you know, when I talked with Dan during the Preakness and he talked about how, you know, he had some things on his card, on his tip sheet for the Kentucky Derby, decided as racing was going on that, you know, it probably wasn't the best course of action, but still stuck with what he had given out to clients and to readers of the site. So, you know, that right there was a very good indication of, you know, of Dan's transparency and honesty here in this business. And to hear that you're doing more for the people that go over to the site, that's really fantastic to hear, and I commend you for that.
Thank you. We're trying our best. And, you know, the hardest part is, you know, time's money for everybody. And so we're trying to keep it to a 30-minute show. And I don't know if you ever heard of Elite Racing when we were doing that with some guys from California. And they met well, but I think the show just drug on, you know, 6-8 hours is just too much for handicappers. They want to have, you know, a 30-minute to an hour thing. You know, tell me what you think. Give me some tickets and let me get my butt to the racetrack with all my friends and have some fun. So that's what we're trying to do, just trying to not only have a piece of paper in their hand, but try to tell them exactly, you know, what wagers that day we would make and what races we would go get a hot dog.
Well, before we take a look ahead here to the Belmont, we'll take a look back at the Preakness. Exaggerator takes care of business here in this one. Nyquist finishes third as the race favorite. Were you surprised with how things went at Pimlico?
You know, the only thing I was surprised at, it was Mario deciding to go head-to-head with that other horse. I don't understand why he did it. I understand that the whole goal at the beginning, you know, was to pop the gate and not get buried with mud in his face the whole race. But once he got into position next to that basically it was a shill, you know, the horse couldn't win. So why go up and engage like that? You know, I heard rumors that he tried to get off the horse and Nyquist was into the bit and just wouldn't let him do it. And maybe that's true. But he ran his race in the first half mile. So, you know, when they hung up that half mile split, I was pretty confident our horse was going to win. It was just a matter of can we hit the exact in the try and can we make some money. But I was really confident Exaggerator was going to win soon as Mario did that. So, you know, it really didn't surprise me the way Exaggerator ran. I thought he would win. I thought he was the best horse. And, you know, in the mud, that kind of just moved him up even more. So, you know, the way the track played that day, you know, with all the rain, you know, nothing. It didn't really surprise me. Cherry Wine running, you know, coming up the rail with Corey Lannery, that didn't surprise me. He does it every day at Churchill. So, you know, it's almost like him and Calvin Burrell had dinner a few times, and Calvin told him, hey, I'm getting older. You need to start coming up the rail, and you're going to win all these races. because the last couple of years, Lannery's been doing that nonstop, and for the most part, it's been working. It didn't work with Mo Tom a couple times in some big races, but anytime you see Lannery on a closer, like with Cherry Wine, he's going to come up the rail again in the Belmont if he can.
Well, and I think that's one of the interesting things and one of the more advanced concepts with horse racing. I mean, you know, you can kind of look at, and we've talked about this before, you know, you don't put too much stock into the bloodlines, and a lot of people probably do that, but learning jockey tendencies is so important. I mean, you know, really it's a lot like knowing coaching tendencies in football or basketball or hockey or, you know, whatever the case, but you know, knowing how jockeys are going to run these races, you know, and of course all these races are different lengths and all that type of thing. So, you know, I think that would be a really good tip for listeners, you know, going through the rest of this year and then heading into next year's Triple Crown, is becoming more familiar with these jockeys that are, you know, in the limelight during this part of the year.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, it's like doing a scouting report in basketball or baseball. You know, my dad was a Major League Baseball scout for years, and, you know, he kind of taught me that, you know, a long time ago. You not only do you have to recognize talent, but tendencies is a big thing. And, you know, there's certain horses that won't relax, like Noble Bird's on the card Saturday. He's not going to relax. We know he's not going to relax. He hasn't relaxed in any starts the last year or so. So you know what's going to happen with that horse. And like with J.J. Castellano, I mean, he's a great rider, but he does not want to come from way back. He's not comfortable being way in the back. So you know whoever he's on, he's going to have them somewhere in the middle of the pack to the front of the pack. It's just the way he rides. And Kent DeSormo has got a huge tendency to move early. You know, he's convinced that with a closer, I want to move early. I want to get the lead at the head of the lane and then tell them to come get me. You know, I'm not going to wait. You very rarely see Kent DeSormo nail somebody on the wire. He just doesn't ride like that. Where Julian Le Perroux, he likes to wait to the last second, you know, and nail people on the wire. And that's why he gets a lot of seconds and thirds, because he waits so long. But when you know those kind of tendencies, it really helps you when you handicap races, because you can kind of see it, you know, playing out in your head as you're reading it.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about the Acorn Stakes here, then we'll go to the Belmont. And then, like I said, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, the non-Triple Crown races, because, I mean, obviously horse racing is something that goes on every single day around the world. And, you know, obviously if you want to be a horse racing handicapper, then it's something that you want to focus on when it's not just the Triple Crown. But we'll look at the Acorn Stakes here, part of Saturday's undercard. Six fillies set to go in this one. Forever Darling draws post number one, Off the Tracks in two, Paula Queen in three, Karina Mia in four, Catherine Sophia, the winner of the Kentucky Oaks, is five, Go Maggie Go, the winner of the Black Eyed Susan Stakes at Pimlico, is in the sixth spot here. Very small field. So what does this mean for you in terms of the way that you bet the race?
Well, I'm just going to, that's a key race for me in the pick three and in the pick five, because, you know, I don't think anybody can win this race except for the four of the five, Karina Mia or Catherine Sophia. So I'm just going to use those two, and I'm going to bet some pick threes in the first three races. And then I'm going to use that race as, you know, if you could cut it down to two in the pick five, it doesn't cost that much. And, you know, for the small players, I understand if you only take Catherine Sophia, because she's going to be even money. She's going to be really tough to beat. But I've never seen so much confidence out of the Belmont barn for a filly before in my life. They are so confident that the four is going to win this race, Karina Mia, that I have to use them both. I just have to. And when I look at the way this race is going to play out, I think they're both going to sit in a stalking position, you know, somewhere a length or two lengths off of Falola Queen or Off the Tracks. Is one of those two are going to send to the lead, and these two are going to stalk. And then when they turn for home, they're both going to swoop past them at the head of the lane in the middle of the track, and it's going to be a matter of which one of them's better. And I really can't tell you which one's better. I don't know. I just know when they're at the 16th pole, it's going to be a fun race, I think, because I think these two are going to draw away from the rest of them, and I think they're going to be head bobbing all the way to the wire, which will be a fun race to watch.
So when there are just six horses in the field like there are for this race, do you kind of take the jockeys out of it a little bit? Because at that point, it seems like it's just almost, you know, which horse is the best, because they don't have as much traffic to get through. There's not as much of a fight to get inside. So do you sort of alter your philosophy a little bit then?
No, I don't. I think in the small races you can really look at jockey tendencies to see who's probably going to go to the front, especially in a race like this where there's really no true speed horse, and knowing Le Perreux's not going to send the four because he don't send anything, the four is not going to go to the lead. And J.L. Ortiz sends the – he loves to send horses, so that's why I think he's going to go to the lead with the three. Not that she looks like she's fast enough on paper, but the rider changed to a speed riding jockey. I think he's going to gun her out of the gate and think that's the only way he can win. So I really do look at jockeys even in small races. I really do.
One that horse that really interests me here in this race is Off the Tracks. You've got that Velasquez-Pletcher combination, which has been successful before in the past. But it seems like here Off the Tracks is going to run in the Jersey Girl on Friday and then come back again in the Acorn Stakes on Saturday, which seems very odd to me.
No, she scratched Friday.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
because, I mean, that wouldn't make a whole lot of sense at all, but I still saw her listed on the website I'm looking at here, so...
Yeah, New York's got a really weird rule where if you enter two straight days, you must run on Saturday. You must run in the second day. You can't run in the first day. Really, really strange rule. But and I was joking around on Twitter, I don't know if you saw that she was entered in the race on Friday where I thought she was a cinch, couldn't lose, and she was going to get about a $70,000 purse. And then they put her in a race on Saturday where I don't think she can win. She might be able to run third if one of these other horses. I mean, somebody, Go Maggie Go or Off the Tracks, is going to probably run third. But I just don't think she fits with the top two. I mean, she's a really good horse. But when you look at the Rags numbers and you look at the Byers numbers and the Briz numbers, she's really, really going to have to improve to be able to beat the top two.
So I don't want you to tip your hand too much for Saturday's card, but, you know, is there a race that you think has a really, really strong field in the lead-up to the Belmont Stakes?
Oh, the eighth race is impossible. The grass race with Recepta and a couple of the Euros, and, you know, a lot of other fillies in there that can win. I mean, that race is absolutely impossible, which is perfect for the pick four players because it starts the pick four. And, you know, that's the race that you got a heck of a shot to get a price. I mean, Strike Charmer's 8-1, Tapestry's 15-1. Celestine is 12-1. The somehow, whoever made the morning line must not have researched too well on the Euro horse to make her 10-1. Because anybody that did any research on this filly, she should be 5-2 or 3-1, and she's 10-1 morning line. So, I mean, that's a filly you absolutely have to use, Irish Rookie, in the eighth to start the pick four. And then you go to the Met Miles, impossible, the ninth race. So, I mean, it's a perfect setup for the late pick four to pay something. I mean, Flintshire's probably going to win, but no cinch. And then you got Exaggerator in the Belmont that looks good, but no cinch. So, I mean, this pick four could pay boxcars. It really could.
Well, and it certainly seems like it's going to be a really exciting Saturday at Belmont, even though we don't have the storyline of a possible Triple Crown here. Of course, we had it last year with American Pharoah, who went on and dominated the Breeders' Cup Classic as well. But do you feel like that's something that helps you here this year with the field? I mean, you're going to have probably a lot less casual action because you won't have people pouring on American Pharoah. But the flip side is American Pharoah was such a big favorite that it created value for the rest of the field.
Yeah, I mean, for the people that are looking for prices, I mean, this is a race that, you know, Exaggerator looks like he'll probably win, but he doesn't have to win. And, you know, there's a lot of ways you can go in this pick four to try to make money. And, you know, once you get past Exaggerator, I mean, there's seven or eight horses that could win this race. So, you know, if he don't fire his best shot and you got an opinion in there with somebody else, I would definitely go for it because, you know, he's a lukewarm favorite at best. I really liked him in the Preakness, but I'm not convinced he has to win the Belmont. I mean, he still looks good, don't get me wrong, but there's other horses in there, Governor Malibu and Destin and Sudden Breaking News and Stradivari. I mean, there's a handful of them that got every rhyme or reason to run a big race.
Well, and one of the differences here about this one, not only do you have the horses coming back you know, with a quick turnaround, those that ran the Kentucky Derby and also the Preakness, which would be Exaggerator. Lanny is one of them as well. You know, so you've got these three races in about a 5-6 week span. And also this is the longest one, the mile and a half at Belmont. How does that factor into your handicapping with this being the longest race? Do you tend to, you know, stay away from the guys or from the horses that have run both legs of the Triple Crown so far? Do you look for a fresh horse to emerge?
I try to look for a horse either out of the Peter Pan or that ran in the Derby and skipped the Preakness, so they could sit back 5 years or 5 weeks. And at least you got a, you know, by watching the Derby, you've got a, you know, a little bit of expertise on how he's probably going to run, if he can get the distance. Did he get in any trouble in the Derby? You know, Destin, I'm not that wild about him, but he is a Todd Pletcher horse. He does have Castellano. He does have a good post. So he's going to be 1, 2, 3 out of the gate, and he'll have every reason to win if he's good enough. You know, Governor Malibu ran a nice race in the Peter Pan. I'm not sure how good that race was. Unified, you know, ran a nice figure and ran early and then kind of was slowing down at the end. So it makes those other horses look a little bit better, like they were closing on him. But he ran so fast early, he had to slow down. So, I mean, like I said, once you get past Exaggerator, you know, Stradivari ran a real sneaky race in the Preakness. I mean, he's another Pletcher horse that's got a big chance. I tend to try to stay to the horses that have Belmont connections, you know, the Pletchers, you know, the Jerkins, the horses that have got trainers there that know Belmont, and try to stay away from these mystery horses like Lanny. Those kind of horses just don't run in the Belmont. They never do. If Lanny hits the board, I'd be shocked. I'm not going for him. You know, just like that Mudaji last year, I wasn't going for that last year either. You know, so if Exaggerator's the horse that we think he is, he'll win. But if he, you know, if he gets a California Chrome type bad trip, you know, he can get beat because he's certainly not heads above everybody.
When I look at this field, you know, there are 4 30-to-1 shots right in the middle of the field. You've got Gettysburg, Seeking the Soul, Forever D'Oro, and then also Trojan Nation. And Lanny, who you also think has no real shot to contend, sitting there at 20-to-1. So in the 6 through 10 range, you've got some long shots that aren't expected to have very good runs here. Does that make it difficult for Exaggerator or maybe Creator to come from the outside and get through, you know, what could be kind of a slow middle of the pack?
I don't think so, because the backstretch at Belmont is so long. I mean, you can't even see the end from one end to the other. I mean, they're going to have an entire mile to kind of stretch themselves out and be able to weave around horses and things. And those horses, like Gettysburg, will run to the half mile, and then he'll stop. Seeking the Soul will run for a little while, and he'll stop. You know, Trojan Nation, I don't think will ever be in front of Exaggerator. And Lanny will probably be behind him, too. So, you know, I look for Exaggerator to be able to lay mid-pack. And when Kent says to go, he's going to go. It's just, I think he's going to ride a race similar to Real Quiet, where he's going to make an early move. He's going to try to sweep him on the turn and then tell him, hey, I'm the best horse. Come get me. But I don't see any of those middle horses hitting the board. I just don't. I don't see the 6, 7, 8, 9, or 10 hitting the board at all. You know, my tries are going to kind of look like, you know, the 4, 5, and 11 with the 4, 5, and 11 with the inside horses, the 1, 2, and 3. And then I'll probably throw Brody's Cause in the third hole and maybe Creator in the third hole only because of Irad Ortiz. He knows Belmont real well. So if Creator's got any punch at all, but I'm not wild about Tappets going that long either. So, you know, I'm not real wild about Creator. So, I mean, I think if Exaggerator is going to get beat, he's going to get beat by somebody in the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 holes.
Well, you've mentioned Sudden Breaking News a couple times, who ran fifth in the Derby, skipped over the Preakness, and you mentioned that, you know, you kind of do like to take a look at those horses that ran in the Derby and then had some time off. Is there something about Sudden Breaking News that, you know, fits this longer track a little bit better?
Yeah, and the fact that I'm not huge on breeding, but when I stare at AP Indy and a Fleet Alex and Mineshaft, I mean, you can't scream a mile and a half more than that, you know, for an American-bred horse. So he's bred like crazy to keep running. Anybody that's ever watched him run can see that that's what he wants to do. You know, he's just going to keep running and running and running, and he's not going to stop. So, you know, I think of all the horses besides Exaggerator to hit the board, you know, if I was a guy that was betting the show or bet win place show or kind of just want a horse that you really think is going to hit the board, I think Sudden Breaking News is going to hit the board. I don't know if he's good enough to win, but I'll be really surprised if he's not 1, 2, 3, just because he's just going to keep plodding along. And Mike Smith's a great change in rider. He knows Belmont. He's going to move the horse at the right time to give him every chance to win. And we'll see if he's good enough. I mean, he's bred to be good enough. He's going to come late. He reminds me a little bit of Birdstone, you know, when Birdstone ran down Smarty Jones. So I don't know if he could ever beat Smarty Jones again, if they would ever run against each other again. But Birdstone was one of those horses that was just getting better, had the 5-week layoff, and just keeps plodding along. And I think that's exactly what he's going to do. He's just going to keep plodding along and plodding along. And if Exaggerator don't fire, you know, for the long shot players out there, you know, my dad's going to do it. He keeps talking about pitching Exaggerator and trying to hit a monster trifecta. I said, well, if you're going to do that, you have to keep Sudden Breaking News 1, 2, 3, and throw in all those long shots around him, and just hope Exaggerator don't fire, because that's the only way for long shot players. I think I just can't look at any other long shots and be confident they're going to hit the board other than Sudden Breaking News, just because of his breeding and his style and his rider. He's screaming, you know, I'm going to be on the board. You got to use me.
Well, we talked a few weeks ago about some of the adjustments you made following the Kentucky Derby. And, you know, like I've talked about on this show, I've mentioned it in segments with you, and I've talked about it overall. You know, as a handicapper, whether it's sports, whether it's horse racing, you know, nobody hits at 100% clip. So you're always making adjustments. You're always learning new things, possibly looking to value something a little bit more heavily than you used to. So heading into this last Triple Crown race, you know, what has been your biggest takeaway from the two races we've seen so far, and what do you think may continue this weekend?
Well, I think what I'm taking away is that these horses are a little bit better than people thought. You know, everybody thought it was such a weak group. I'm not sure it is a weak group. I just think that what's happening with trainers around the country is that they're being a lot more cautious with these horses that could make some money. They're not running them 7, 8, 9 times as 2-year-olds. So they're so late in developing that all these horses in April and May are starting to develop. You know, the Governor Malibu's of the world are getting better. And, you know, Cherry Wine's getting better. Stradivari's getting better. I mean, these horses are getting better every time they run. And I think the Belmont's going to kind of push them together a little bit to see, you know, who is actually better than each other. But I don't think, you know, I just don't think Exaggerator's that much better than all the rest of them that we just say, you know, let's give him the race. He's going to win if the gate opens, because these other horses are really getting better. Stradivari got a lot of experience in the Preakness, and I'm really curious to see how much better he got. And Governor Malibu is getting better, and Cherry Wine's got the perfect post position, and Sudden Breaking News has got a good post that he's going to be running. If you remember 2 years ago when they all hit the wire within a length, I think Chrome got beat 2 lengths. There was like 5 of them within 2 lengths. I think this race has got a chance to have a finish like that where there's 4 or 5 of them within a couple of lengths. And, you know, maybe Exaggerator will still win, but I think it's got a chance to have a big finish at the end with them all spread across the track like that.
Do you think that's a sustainable trend that you'll keep an eye on for next year, where maybe you do look at some 2-year-olds that didn't run a whole lot, or maybe some of the 3-year-olds that didn't do a whole lot during the road to the Kentucky Derby?
Yeah, I think that is a trend. I really do. Because there's only a couple of trainers out there that really are pushing their 2-year-olds. You know, most of them are not pushing their 2-year-olds anymore. You know, they're just kind of, you know, maybe they'll start running them in August at Saratoga or Del Mar. But if they're not ready for that, then they'll hold them and wait for Keeneland or Churchill in the winter and unveil them there. And let, you know, that. And the ones that are good, they'll say to themselves, okay, we got to get 4 or 5 races in them before the Derby, you know, and that's it. You know, they're not really looking to run 8, 9, 10 times anymore. because there's so many good three-year-old races out there now for a lot of money that people don't even think about. You know, the Sham and the West Virginia Derby, the Ohio Derby, the Lone Star Derby, the Iowa Derby. I mean, there's so many of them out there that are 200,000, 300,000, 500,000 that they just don't want to rush these horses and ruin them. Because if you ruin them trying to get to the Derby, you can really ruin them for good. And there's just no reason to do it anymore. Unless you're a spendthrift farm and you've got so much money, it doesn't matter. Or a Windstar, you know, where they can just run Gettysburg. They buy into Gettysburg and run them just to have a faster pace. You know, most people don't have the stupid kind of money that when they get a nice horse like this, you know, they really need the horse to be a nice horse and make some money, you know, so they can then take that money and buy other horses. So you don't want to ruin it when you get a good one.
Well, obviously with the Triple Crown, we get a lot more betting interest from casual horse players. But as I said, you know, there's horse racing every single day throughout the country year round. Everyone starts to take notice for the Triple Crown, but you're missing out on some good opportunities to make money otherwise. So, you know, I know that for one thing, investing in the picks over at Fat Bald Guy Racing is a very good way to, you know, help yourself on a daily basis with the tracks around the country. But for those that are listening that maybe want to get more involved in horse racing, or those that, you know, want to go out to the track on weekends and go have some fun with their buddies and enjoy a couple beverages, you know, in terms of just normal everyday types of racing, what kind of suggestions and tips would you have for people?
Well, I think you have to be realistic. You know, I compare horse racing a lot to golf. You know, there's guys that can not practice at all and shoot 85 or 90 and have a good time, and that's fine for them. But, you know, the guys like me that play three or four times a year, you can't get mad that you can't shoot 80 when you don't practice. You put nothing into it. You go to the course and you can get a caddy for $12 and you don't want to pay for it. You'd rather ride in a cart and have four beers. You know, the horse racing is a lot like that. I mean, if you walk into the track, you haven't studied, you're not prepared, you know you're going to have three or four beers and a hot dog, you can't really be mad when you lose. You know, and a lot of people say, I'm not going back to the track, I lost $100. And I'll say, well, did you study the form? Did you get an expert's advice? Did you have a plan? Did you have it all in writing before you walked out the door? Did you drink alcohol while you were betting? Well, if you did, then how do you expect to win? You know, there's guys that are lifelong racetrack guys that have lost their shirts and houses and everything else, and they drink 12 beers every time they go to the track. And I just look at them and say, well, how do you expect to do well when you do that? That's not going to happen. You got to be realistic. I mean, if you're just going to have fun, be realistic. You know, realize that, you know, you might get lucky now and then, but you're probably going to lose if you don't get expert help. But if you're going and you say, hey, I'm going today, I want to try to win, you got to study the form and you got to get expert help. So even if it's not me, it's got to be somebody. You got to get some help and try to your picks. And if you've got $100, your biggest bet should probably be $20 a race. You can't go in and bet the 100 in the first race and then wonder why you're going to the money machine. You know, you got to really have a plan and you got to be realistic. And that's what I try to tell people all the time. You know, if you're taking $100 at a track and you come home with $100, you should be happy. You had a good day. You had a fun day with your friends and you didn't lose any money. You know, that to me, that's a pretty good day. You know, but if you're going to go and spend 40 of that 100 on beer and 10 on a hot dog and hamburger, you can't expect to come home with more than the 100 when you spent 50 of it on alcohol. So that's my philosophy. You know, I got a buddy that sits with me every day and he drinks about 30 beers. And basically what he does is he just takes his money, puts it on the table and says, here, make some bets for me. And, you know, it's up to you, because he knows that he doesn't know what he's doing. He knows he's got no chance. He'd rather have fun with the beer and eat the food and goof around. And, you know, so that's what I tell people to do all the time. You know, get somebody you trust. And, you know, get an expert. I mean, we don't charge squat for our stuff compared to most people, you know, but if you don't want to pay it, I understand, at least go to somebody that's free. You know, you can Google people out there that are free, that are good, that you can at least get their picks and get a guide and have a chance. You know, and that's kind of what I tell everybody.
If you had anything on say, you know, maybe one really key wagering angle at a certain track that almost always seems to come through that you can come up with off the top, you know, kind of a baseline to maybe start building a little bit of that bankroll. Is there a track that, you know, you just see the same thing happening over and over again?
Not really. I mean, no. You know, Churchill's really favorites. I mean, when you look at the percentage of favorites at Churchill, that's probably, even Keeneland, the Kentucky Circuit, because they all seem to stay there, the favorites tend to win a lot more at Keeneland and Churchill and Ellis Park, to where you don't have to try to, I mean, guys that are running around trying to find 10-to-1 shots, you kind of got to stay in New York to do that. You got bigger fields, you got a lot more grass races where you can get some 10-to-1s and 8-to-1s. But if you're going to bet in Kentucky, you're just going to have to deal with the fact that the favorites are going to win very often. And, you know, it's not odd to see a 35% to 38% favorite, you know, winning at Churchill. And so if you like to play favorites, and then there's a lot of guys out there that like that, if you like to play favorites, you got to play the Kentucky Circuit because it's just the percentages don't lie. And then I would also say, you know, the thing to look at the most, for me at least, is class handicapping. You know, you really got to learn the different classes and what's a class drop, what's not. And I kind of, for people that don't know out there, I kind of compare it to basketball again. You know, the NBA, the college level, the high school level, the grade school level. I mean, that's the kind of the way it is in horse racing. You know, the professionals, the grade one horses, when they drop and play against college horses, or the college horses drop and play against high school horses, you know, you got to really know when those class drops are happening. And if you don't know, you got to study it and learn it, because that's huge in horse racing. There's a horse running Saturday at Churchill that's been running against the big boys, dropping in against all the also-rans, and he should win. Now, a lot of people say, well, he hasn't won, and he's run all these races and hasn't won. Well, when you're playing against LeBron James and Michael Jordan, and now all of a sudden you're going against the local beer league up the street, I mean, you're going to be better. And so this horse should win. His name's Showbound at Churchill on Saturday. That horse should win. And, you know, those are the kind of horses you can zero in on a daily basis and try to get an edge, you know, when they're class dropping like that. And that's kind of what I look for a lot, is class droppers, especially on the Kentucky circuit. You know, and when you get to the New York circuit, you know, you look more for prices, especially in these grass races. They're so wide open. You know, you look for the good connections and the good riders. You know, you can get Irad Ortiz at 5 or 6 to 1. You can get J.L. Ortiz at 5 or 6 to 1 on the grass. The grass races in New York tend to not play to the favorites, and that's where you can get some prices for the guys that don't like to play favorites. You just got to wait for the grass races in New York and try to stab those 6, 8, 10 to 1 shots. And that's what my buddy John is real good. John Mooney from New York is real good for, if you want to look him up on the internet. He's really good at grass races.
Well, you can find Keeneland Dan on Twitter at FatBaldGuyRacing, so racing minus the G. And as I mentioned, FatBaldGuyRacing.com is the website. What do you guys have available this weekend for the Belmont?
Yeah, we've got for $29, we're given 5 different tracks. You got the Belmont whole card. You got Canterbury, which has got the lowest takeout in the country. You got Santa Anita, Churchill, and Monmouth Park. So we kind of covered the whole country. You get, you know, almost 60 races with those 5 cards. And then we're doing a video, which I'm getting ready to do here shortly, that's going to go to all the players on specific tickets of what we got to make. We also got a budget on a sheet for if you've got $300 to $350 that you're bringing to the track Saturday, with suggestions of exactly what we would play with that money. And, you know, we spell it out for them and everything on exactly what bets we would make. And then on the sheet, we've got rolling daily doubles. We've got rolling pick threes, if that kind of stuff's for you. So, you know, we try to touch everybody. You know, we got some key plays, you know, best bets. We've also got some long shot plays, you know, to look at, you know, for the long shot players. So we're trying to make a little bit for everybody. And, you know, for $29, you get an awful lot. And don't forget, you also get the free Frisnet PPs at all 5 tracks. You know, you walk into a racetrack, it's $7 just to pick up a program these days. So you don't have to do that with us. You can print out the Brisnet stuff for free, put a staple on it, and you just save $7 when you walked into the track as part of our deal. So So we try to make it affordable. And then, you know how it is on the regular days, we only charge $10, but we still give multiple tracks. But we had to raise it a little bit for Belmont Day because we got to pay all our people that are helping us out with all these different racetracks.
Not even 50 cents a race for this week. So that's a really, really tremendous deal over there at fatballguyracing.com. Keeneland, Dan, loved having you on. It's been really, really terrific. Thanks for making it work with your schedule. I appreciate that. We'll have to get you on the air again very soon, man. But good luck this weekend. And again, thanks for everything that you've given to us.
Sounds good. Good luck, and thanks for having me.
Really great stuff there from Keeneland Dan of fatballguyracing.com. How about that? 60 races worth of picks and analysis in the Brisnet Forum, $29. You can't beat that deal. Really can't beat that deal. So great stuff there from Keeneland Dan. Happy we're able to make that segment work here this week. We'll see if we can get him back on the air here again just to talk about some of the other tracks, some of the other bigger events outside of the Triple Crown here. Throughout the summer. Really looking forward to hearing from him once again. We'll be right back after a quick note from DSI Sportsbook.
This segment of Bang the Book Radio is brought to you by BetDSI Sportsbook. DSI is one of the industry leaders in customer service, wagering options, and is offering Bang the Book listeners a $10 free betting account just for signing up. Simply sign up with a promo code BANG10. Again, that's BANG10 and get $10 free today at BetDSI.
Make sure you try out that Bang10 promo code over at DSI Sportsbook, or if the free $10 bet isn't enough for you, you can go over there, use the promo code BANG300, get 100% deposit bonus for the sportsbook, 100% for the live casino, and 100% for the poker room, so you can take advantage of either one of those generous offers from one of our top affiliates over at DSI Sportsbook. So we've got game 4 of the NBA Finals coming up tonight, Cleveland Cavaliers, Golden State Warriors. It is Friday. It means we get to hear Cole Ryan with the third and final edition for this week of Betting the Buckets.
Thank you very much, Adam, and everybody. You know why you're here. You know what we're all about. It is Betting the Buckets. It's the NBA playoffs. It's game 4. We're ready to go. Let's get started. I'm going to go beyond the box score. I'm going to cover game 3, talk about what happened in this game, and talk about why it's a turning point and not for the reason you may think. I'm going to discuss why there should still be a little bit of love for Kevin Love. We'll talk about the line watch, the odds that were put out, and why it's a bit different than any line that has been put out so far. And, of course, we'll throw in some read between the lines. I think I have 3, maybe even 4. We'll talk about the NBA Finals Game 4. I'll give you a preview and a pick. And I'm going to highlight the many members of the Buckets Brigade, my Twitter followers, and wrap everything up nice and neat to end the weekend style. Segment is always blazing quick with a pick. Let's get going. Let's talk about Game 3. We all know what happened. Cleveland came out, and they buried the Warriors. They killed them. They beat them up bad. I was on the over from the get-go, but if you follow me on Twitter, I posted the Cavs as a play late, mainly because Kevin Love was out. But really, why is the change? Why did the Cavs play different? Well, first of all, home court. We've talked about it all this playoffs. Home court has been the difference all along. And as my man, Buckets, a Brigade member, Colin Mahan said, who would have thought home court in the finals would be a 63-point swing? You're right, nobody. Truth be told, I wouldn't think it would have been that big either, and I don't think it will be in the future. But I will tell you it does a few things. First of all, it's easier to shoot. I know it sounds silly, but they love that home rim. And once they started getting confidence, they started to get shots fall. Like Kyrie Irving, for example, 6 of 8 on pull-up jumpers in the first quarter, 4 of 19 on pull-up shots in the first two games of the series. Once a few started falling, a lot started falling. Same with J.R. Smith. He passed on open shots early, but once they started falling, he started taking them. They started jumping in. Another blowout. It happens all the time. Wednesday's game, the 10th in this year's playoffs, decided by 30 or more points. A lot of blowouts this year. Interesting. Something I'm going to look into for the future and talk about, because I don't think it's a coincidence. I think something's going on. I really want to equate it to a biased home court referee advantage, but Cavs still had their problems. Think about their bench. The Cavs starting 5, 105 of the team's 120 points, only 15 points from the bench. That's not going to get the job done. It's really not. But get away from the mainstream media, or at least open your eyes. Stop talking about concussion. Stop talking about Kevin Love being out, being the difference. Everybody's talking about, should Kevin Love play? Should we bench him? Should he be a starter? Blah, blah, blah. If you think the difference in this game is not having Kevin Love, you weren't watching the game. You weren't. Because, first, I will tell you, the real difference in this game was defense. The Cavs played incredible defense, especially if you watch in the first 8 minutes of this game. Look, they were attacking the ball. They were sticking to their players, fighting through screens. They had switched before this, and when they switched, they had left wide open shots, right? Bad news. Now they were blocking. They were cutting off passing lanes. They weren't opening up anything for the Warriors. When the Warriors dribbled inside the three-point line to do anything, they were being devoured by defense. The defense was the difference. And while we're on it, let's talk about superstar subtraction. If you followed me all season long, you know this is a system I love. I've used all season, most of the season. It doesn't come into play for everything, but let's talk about it, because a lot of people will go, superstar subtraction, that must mean a good player has to be out and we'll go against them. Kind of, but what I'll tell you is it's got to be somebody that's in the starting lineup. It's got to be somebody who produces, and that's Kevin Love. A lot of people are like, he's not a superstar, it's not going to matter. The Buckets Brigade member Chris Wynn, he came in, he said, addition by subtraction, he was right, it is. Right, because when he was out, everybody else, they brought their game to a different level, right? Started with Kyrie Irving. He's hitting jumpers everywhere. LeBron, think about his first 5 to 7 shots. They were all in the paint. They were all in the paint, which means he was getting fouled. He was getting hit. So really, the team got more aggressive. They got more aggressive defensively. They really did. And look, don't blame it on Kevin Love. If anything, I think this is going to help. And that brings me to my next point and my first read between the lines. And that's Kevin Love. Before the game, when he was ruled out, he came out and admitted. He said, I'm frustrated. I want to play. I should be in there. And look, first of all, players are going to do that. All players want to play, even through concussion. But he realizes he's going to be labeled as soft. Soft? The guy had his shoulder ripped out against the Celtics last year. I know, because my Celtics did it. And this year, he took an elbow to the back of the head. You ever take an elbow to the back of the head? I know. I've played hoops before. I've done it. You rub your head for like 20 minutes. It hurts. It's crazy. He knows if he didn't play, he's going to be labeled as soft. He's going to be labeled as injury prone. He's got a contract about to be done. I know he's going to leave the team. I know he wants to get paid. He doesn't want that label. That's good, though, because now if you're the coach, if you're Tyronn Lue, can you take him off the bench? Sure. I don't even think that'd be bad. Coming off the bench, I think it'd be great. They'd have offense off the bench. But where I really think it comes into play is I really think Tyronn Lue says, look, we played better defense without you on the floor. So if you want to be on the floor, you better play defense. You better play your ass off. You better play as hard as you can possibly play, because that's what we need. That's what we got from everybody else, because they need the points. They didn't get the points from the bench, right? So the only problem with Kevin Love is he doesn't play defense. Hopefully that changes after this. But let's get to the line watch. Let's look at how the odds makers have adjusted. Not only have the odds makers adjusted, but the public's adjusted. Online sportsbook bookmaker, one of our favorites here at bangthebook.com, opened this game up with the Cavaliers -2, total set at 207. The line has been bet down. We're getting 206.5, so it's been bet down on the total a little bit. And we're getting -1.5. There's still twos out there, but we mainly are looking at -1.5 across the board. Here's the kicker. 64% of the betting public as of right now is on Cleveland. They're all jumping on the home team. They're also jumping on the over, 68%. So where are we going to go with this? What are we going to do? Well, let's get to it. Let's get right to the pick. I know that's why you're here, and that's why I love basketball. That's what I love to talk about. Let's talk about a few read between the lines. First, LeBron. All he talked about was Kyrie Irving in his press conference. If you read it, heard it, looked at it, all he said was, hey, he did it, man. He lifted this team. He was the guy we relied on. He's the guy we wanted. He did the great thing. Look, LeBron knows he can carry this team. He needs Irving. That was his way of saying, you're the man, keep doing it, putting the pressure on him. Not only in, I'm sure he's doing it in the locker room, but now he's doing it in public. Hey, go out there, you're the man, do this, right? So I think that's going to put a little pressure on Kyrie Irving to try to carry the load. Also, in the biggest one, and the one I love the most, Draymond Green. He came out and did an old school thing. Called out everybody, the team, the coach. He said, we need to adjust on X's and O's. He said, we're soft. He said, we got punked. Wow, that's a big statement. I like that statement. Plus, Klay Thompson came out. Dirty plays. Mozgov hit him. If you saw that nice, It was basically a leg sweep in the paint. Gave him a nice deep thigh bruise. Ooh, this series is about to get ugly. If you do not know your NBA history, boys and girls, grab your Google. Throw in, how about this, Mikhail Clotheslines Rambis, 1984 NBA playoffs. Celtics, Lakers, great playoff series. Larry Bird comes out, says the team's playing like a bunch of girls. Mikhail comes out, clotheslines Rambis, people fight, gets crazy, bunch of points going up. Ooh, it's about to get ugly. Plus, what's wrong with Stephen Curry? Please don't talk about his injury. Please, mainstream media, don't come out and say his knee hurts him. Please don't come out and say there's a problem. I don't think there is. I just think he needs to find the rhythm. Once he gets that rhythm, it's going to be good. Here's what I'm picking. I know what you're saying. You saw it coming, but I'm taking the over. Give me the over 206.5. I see a 206 at Five Dimes. I see a 206 at Pinnacle. I see one at GT Bets, too. Go get it. Take that over 206. This game is going to get ugly. There's going to be a fight. There's going to be fouls. There's going to be points. It's going to get ugly. You saw the second half of the last game. Points aplenty. Draymond Green, be careful. You get that technical, you're going to be suspended. That'll be an ugly position for the NBA in the finals. It could happen. Am I going to make a pick on the side? Maybe. If you ask me right now to make a pick, I'll be honest with you. I'm really leaning Golden State. But home court's been so dominant, I'm not going to make a pick just yet. But follow me on Twitter. I will make one. One way or the other, whether it's a lean, whether it's a play, I'm honest. I'm always wide open with my picks. So that will do it for the segment. Please follow me on Twitter, at ColeRyan9. You can find me at ColeRyan9. Not only will I post picks, but I'll post a lot of trends, stats, you name it. All you have to do is follow me, and you automatically become a member of the Buckets Brigade, and you are going to join some of the best. And I'm telling you, they are out in full force. A lot of my veterans, Matt Spence, Joe Wesson, Corey Walling's jumping on board. Dr. Arpcut's there. We're talking hoops each and every day because we love the NBA Finals. We love the NBA. We're hoops junkies, and we're going to nail Game 4, too. So enjoy Game 4. Enjoy the weekend. And as always, win big, betting the Buckets.
Tremendous stuff there from Cole Ryan. Follow him on Twitter, at Cole Ryan, and the number 9 to become a member of the Buckets Brigade. Quick look at the Stanley Cup Finals here, because at this point, I frankly have no idea what the hell is going to happen. 5 goals in the first period of game five last night. San Jose gets 3 of them. They wind up winning 4-2 on a Joe Pavelski empty netter. So good to see him finally pop that Stanley Cup Finals cherry and pick up a goal here in this one. But 4 goals in the first 5:06 of this game. And everyone thought that we were going to have to strap in for what was going to be a crazy game. Things really settled down though, quite nicely for both teams. But you know, we do have some interesting storylines coming out of this game. One, of course, being Matt Murray. Now, Mike Johnston gave Matt Murray a vote of confidence, bringing him back out to start the second period, and he played well from that point on. But, you know, the 3 goals early on, all of them from pretty high percentage areas, but still some shots that he could have stopped. So from a Pittsburgh standpoint, I mean, now you really have to worry about Matt Murray going into game 6 out on the road after, you know, I mean, how many of the goals in this series have glanced off of him and gone in the back of the net? You know, several of them have. So, you know, you really have to wonder about his state of mind. Martin Jones, again, terrific. Absolutely phenomenal effort yet again for Martin Jones. Stopped 44 of 46 shots. And look, I was wrong about this game. I said on Tuesday, take Pittsburgh at the -140. Got about 30 cents of closing line value there. And yesterday's show, I said you could go -1, you know, with doing the -1 of playing, you know, your money line amount and then your win amount on the -1.5, you could have did that. If you would have told me before the game that Pittsburgh would outshoot San Jose 46-21, I would have absolutely loved the -1, even the -1.5. But Martin Jones was phenomenal in this game for San Jose. Got to give him a ton of credit for that. And again, now I have no idea what happens in game 6. I mean, San Jose gets a new lease on life. Maybe if we get lucky, that pre-series position of playing the arbitrage on Pittsburgh in 7 or San Jose in 7, which I think was +500 and +400, something like that, on the exact series prices, might be looking at a nice profit if we can get this thing to game 7. So truthfully, I'm not even going to give you a pick for game 6 because I have no idea what's going to happen. I mean, San Jose took advantage in game 3. Pittsburgh took advantage in game 4. So the teams have split the 2 games at SAP Center. I have no idea. I don't know. You know, I mean, there's just so much volatility here in these playoff games that I just don't really know what to go with. But hopefully we're going to get a good game on Sunday night. And then if we need a game seven, it will be next Wednesday night in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh obviously cannot lose the series in San Jose. So, you know, I don't know if San Jose, with their backs against the wall at home, going to have a real big push in the first period. If Pittsburgh's going to have a big push trying not to have a winner take all game seven, I don't really know how things are going to play out. But, you know, hopefully we do get that game seven that we're all hoping for. Unless, of course, you've got Pittsburgh in six, in which case, hey, you know, good luck to you with that. But, you know, the pre-series position on either one of these teams in seven games may actually surprisingly find a way to get there, even though Pittsburgh's been the better team throughout this series by a pretty large margin. Looking at the Major League Baseball side of things here for Friday night, I did some in-depth digging and analysis in my usual picks and analysis piece over at bangthebook.com. So if you haven't gotten a chance to check that out, make sure that you do. I took a deep dive on St. Louis and Pittsburgh, also on Baltimore and Toronto, which has been the biggest line move of the day here. We've seen this Baltimore-Toronto line go down about 25 to 35 cents here, depending on where you get your action. And I think it's really interesting because you have this situation where everyone's expecting regression from Marco Estrada. Now, Estrada has all the signs. 241 ERA, 382 FIP, 468 XFIP, 191 BABIP against, 80.7% strand rate. All of those things are there. But in my piece over at bangthebook.com, I wrote about, you know, his pitch usage, his location. His location has really been a key for him. Now, he has issued some walks, does have about a league average strikeout rate, but he's inducing a lot of weak contact. And it's because he's been able to locate his pitches. He's had very, very good command so far this year. And, you know, look, a sub-200 BABIP is not sustainable. The lowest one in the last 14 years belongs to Marco Estrada from last season at 216. There are names like Chris Young on that list, Zach Greinke, Derek Lowe back in 2002, but nobody's had a sub-200 BABIP, and nobody's going to have one. Estrada, though, you know, this is now a year-and-a-half trend where he's been able to induce a lot of weak contact, have that low BABIP against. So, look, there's going to be a reasonable level of regression here. I mean, he's not a 240 ERA pitcher, but he's not going to come anywhere near that 470 XFIP that he's got. He's probably going to wind up somewhere in the 325 range when it's all said and done with his ERA, which, you know, yeah, would be some regression. And as the sample size continues to build up, you know, you need more bad starts in a row for that ERA to climb. But this is not a guy that's going to fall off the face of the earth by any means. I mean, I was very skeptical of him last year for several points, but as I started digging deeper, I mean, his changeup command is so, so good that it makes righties pop the ball up and it makes lefties roll over and pull ground balls to the right side. And you see that, you know, in the numbers that he's got here. I mean, you look at against lefties, a 43.7% ground ball rate, righties have a 28% ground ball rate. So righties are digging that changeup down and away out, popping it up, hitting weak fly balls. Lefties are coming around on it and hooking it on the right side of the infield. It works for him. I mean, you can always outpitch your advanced metrics if you induce a lot of weak contact. If you miss barrels, you're in good shape. And his changeup misses barrels. He's very good at locating his fastball away from hitters. Marco Estrada has been very, very impressive to me. And I give Toronto a ton of credit for uncovering that gem and, you know, for making this guy a sustainable commodity. So I get the line move. Toronto is a minus 160 favorite, was too high. Kevin Gausman's a decent pitcher. Toronto doesn't have the offense they had last year. Baltimore's got a pretty decent offense. But I'm not going to immediately sell my stock in Estrada. And this is a very important teaching point for our listeners out there. And it was, you know, really a teaching point for me as well here today when I was going through some of this data, is that no matter what you believe, no matter how you handicap sports, you still have to be open-minded. Because like I said, I look at Estrada, low ERA, high XFIP, very low BABIP against, high strand rate. Those are usually hallmarks for me to start fading a pitcher because regression is coming. But with Estrada, you know, you have to look at the context. You have to dig a little bit deeper. It's not enough to take that regression on the surface. So when I looked deeper at Estrada, I went, you know what? He's clustering his pitches really well. He's throwing the changeup and the fastball where he wants to put them. He's inducing all this weak contact. this is a guy that's not going to fall apart. Yeah, he will probably gradually regress. You know, he'll have that ERA in the 3.25 range, like I said. But this is a guy that, you know, there's some sustainability to how ridiculous these numbers are. So I'm not ready to discount him, discredit him this quickly. And frankly, I mean, at minus 125, there's probably value on Toronto here tonight. So, you know, we saw a very significant line move here in this game. I understand it. It's justified to an extent. But, you know, like I said, I mean, you have to apply context to all these situations. Oakland and Cincinnati, Sonny Gray on the bump for the Athletics, Anthony DeSclafani for the Reds, DeSclafani making his first start of the year, coming back from an oblique. He's a guy that Eno Saris was very high on over at Fangraphs last year. Marlins sent him over to the Reds. He was very good last year for the Reds. And you know, the thing about DeSclafani is that there's nothing that really blows you away, but he's a stuff kind of guy. You know, he mixes his pitches well, a lot of weak contact, average or better strikeout rate, average or better walk rate. You know, a guy that you can bank on, but first start back here, always a worrisome thing for me. You know, command is usually the last thing to come back, and he had some command issues in his rehab starts. He gave up 6 home runs in 17 innings over 4 rehab starts in AA and AAA. So I'm not ready to buy in with DeSclafani just yet. On the other side, you've got Sonny Gray, who came back from disabled list, made his last start against Houston, threw 5 quality innings, which was a big upgrade for him because he's been getting shelled here of late. But I like him in this matchup. He's taking out a Reds team that isn't familiar with him. And Sonny Gray is a pitchability kind of guy. You know, has an average strikeout rate, generally has a slightly below average walk rate, but induces so much weak contact he can work around it. Because he mixes his pitches so well, you know, he's got good secondaries. His secondaries may almost be better than his fastball in some capacities. But without the back problem, his mechanics are back to normal. He smoothed them out a little bit. I think there's some value on Gray here tonight. Keep in mind, DeSclafani probably on a pitch limit, somewhere in the 85 to 90 range, which means, you know, we could see that bullpen from hell in Cincinnati pretty early on in this game. So I think there's some value on Gray in the A's tonight. Oakland's been a tough team to back in a lot of situations this year, but I think there's a little bit of upside for them. I want to talk about this Houston-Tampa Bay game. Like Houston in this spot, Lance McCullers getting the ball for the Astros. I think the Astros have, you know, a run in them. I talked about this early last week, or maybe it was late the week prior. But you know, if you can find a reasonable price on Houston to win the West or to win the World Series, I'm going to say that I think there's some value in that. I think Texas is due for some regression. Seattle, I don't know if they can sustain this throughout the year. There's a chance that they can, but I think Houston's one of those teams capable of rattling off one of those 40 and 20 type stretches to where they get right back in the race in a hurry. Maybe it starts tonight because McCullers takes on a Tampa Bay offense that's not very good. A lot of guys dinged up right now. A lot of guys on the disabled list. Only Milwaukee and Houston strike out more against right-handed pitchers than the Rays so far this year. McCullers does get swings and misses. There's no doubt about that. On the other side for Tampa Bay, you've got Matt Andrees, who, not a power pitcher, not a strikeout guy at all. 25 strikeouts and 39 and a third. He's a finesse guy. The Astros don't make a lot of weak contact, though. You know, I think guys that throw a wide assortment of breaking balls, like a Jared Weaver, for example, can have some success against Houston. I don't think Andrees is that guy, though. You know, he's got a 2.7% home run to fly ball rate. That's not sustainable at all. 408 ERA, 408 XFIP, 258 ERA. You know, he's not going to give up a ton of home runs, so XFIP's not the best indicator. But I look at his Sierra, 423. Lots of hard contact, not many strikeouts. Andrees is a guy due for some regression here coming up. So I do like the Astros tonight in a pretty good road spot against Tampa Bay. A couple more games here. We've got about 60 seconds left streaming live. So for those listening live, you'll have to catch the archive version to hear my final MLB thoughts. But Cleveland and Los Angeles, the Angels, coming back from New York. We've seen a massive line move on this game. And now we've seen buyback, which I don't really get. And I think that the Indians are back to a value play here in the minus 125 range. You can catch one of those at Bet Online, also at Pinnacle. But the Indians, big win last night in Seattle. You split that series after you did nothing offensively in the first 3 games. That's a nice little confidence booster. You go to Anaheim, where the Angels had to travel cross-country from New York last night after playing a night game. Got in very, very late to the L.A., Anaheim, you know, Southern California area. Now they got to turn around, come back and play. Oh, and by the way, they got swept in New York. Hector Santiago on the bump tonight for the Angels. Corey Kluber for the Tribe. Tons of value on Cleveland here tonight in my mind. Kluber's had some various issues this season, but he's going to be taking on a tired Angels team. Hector Santiago's been terrible. His regression's finally hit, as I've been waiting for about 2 years now. So the Indians definitely have some value here tonight. There's no question about that. I don't know if it's maybe career numbers against Santiago that people are worried about, but you know, the Indians are they make so many moves in the offseason that they're drastically different. They added a lot of right-handed bats, you know, Rajay Davis, Mike Napoli, Juan Uribe. They had added Marlon Byrd, but he's, of course, no longer there. But, you know, they have the ability to throw a lot of platoon advantages at Hector Santiago here tonight. And, again, I mean, Santiago's a guy that hasn't pitched well. Sure, he's got decent splits at home, which maybe is part of the thing here for, you know, for the people that are backing the Angels, but man, I just don't see it. This is such a bot for the Angels here tonight. It's not the spot of Colorado and Pittsburgh that we saw yesterday, but righties are slugging .494 against Hector Santiago this year. 12 of his 14 home runs have been hit by right-handed bats. Struggled at home this year. Small sample size, so I'm not too worried about it, but I think the Indians are a really great play tonight, especially with that buyback coming in, giving us a more favorable price. Final game I want to touch on here. I don't have a play on this game, but I want to bring it up anyway. The Dodgers and the Giants. Clayton Kershaw, Johnny Cueto. Dodgers laying $1.60 here in this one with Kershaw on the bump and a total of 5.5. We don't see too many 5.5s out there. So it opened 6 at most places and got hit to 5.5 immediately. I don't have a play on this game. You know, you look at Kershaw, and Kershaw's numbers are just stupid. I don't even know how it's possible. He has 109 strikeouts. And he's walked 6 guys, 6, in 92 and two-thirds innings. Johnny Cueto, 216 ERA, 263 FIP, 343 XFIP. Getting back to weak contact, he's not giving up the long ball. Cueto is a good fit there in San Francisco. If I had to do anything with this game, I mean, you really have to look at the Dodgers, because when are you ever going to catch Clayton Kershaw at -160? It just doesn't happen. So in that respect, you can look at the Dodgers. Under 5.5, truthfully, probably has some kind of value. I mean, the first five under is probably, what, 3, 3.5? Probably 3, which is remarkable. There may even be a 2.5 out there. Who knows? But, you know, just probably a game to sit back and watch and enjoy. But I wanted to bring it up because I thought it was a very interesting line here for a couple of National League teams. And, man, Clayton Kershaw's good. Like, I know he's good. I mean, I'm fully aware. And he's the one current baseball player I have regrets about never seeing live. I've never seen Clayton Kershaw live. At some point in my lifetime, I have to do that. But, man, and looking at his numbers today, they're astronomically good. And we are truly watching one of the game's best all-time pitchers here, and we get to see him once every 5 days. So, you know, definitely try to take advantage of that whenever you can. But I think we had a really strong show today. Love the segment with Keeneland Dan. I always do. Again, I'll try to get him back on the show here, you know, throughout the summer. We've got that site redesign coming up next week at bangthebook.com. Really looking forward to unveiling that for you. We've got a lot of things going on behind the scenes that we're trying to, you know, put together some things to enhance your Bang the Book experience, both over at the website and also here on the show. So a lot of good things coming your way here over the summer as we get geared up for football season. But I hope you enjoyed what I thought was a really informative, really terrific week here on Bang the Book Radio. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again on Monday.